Last time I looked at the figure for the Earth's population, it stood at 7,125,000,000. But that was 2 days ago, and the figure is larger now. People are born and die every day, but many more are born, so we keep getting bigger as a species. How big will we get? Our first guest today can see a world with 11 billion people, but people who will have to live differently from the way we live today in order to live in some kind of harmony. Paul Hanley wrote the book 11. He appears at the Medford Library this evening at 7. Paul writes constantly on the environment, agriculture, and sustainable development, among other topics. He lives in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Good to have you here, Paul Hanley.
Well, thanks for having me.
So we've seen the number 9 billion used a lot. A lot of people thinking that the Earth's population will level off at 9 billion. What takes you to 11 billion?
Yeah, there's an agency of the United Nations that sort of projects population. So they do an assessment and a projection that comes out about every 2 years. So what they're talking about now, actually since I did the book, it's now they're talking about 11.3 billion as a projection for the end of the century. But they often talk about 9 billion for about 2050, about the middle of the century. So that's 11 billion is a lot of people. It's another 4 billion people. That's more people than there were when I was born.
Well, yeah, more than double, sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
and in both of our lifetime cases. Just that many more people would certainly be an issue. But, I mean, what else do you see in the suite of issues that would face an Earth with that many people on it?
Yeah, you see, the thing is that we're already overshooting Earth's biocapacity, its ability to support us with renewable resources and kind of absorb all the wastes and emissions that we make. So we're already overshooting by about 60%. So one way they put it is they say we're using 1.6 Earth's capacity already at 7. I've heard the population is now around 7.3 billion. So what happens when we add 50% more people? And as people become wealthier and so on, our ecological footprint, kind of all these impacts that we have on the planet, is increasing. So the projection is unless we change, we'd be using the equivalent of about 4 to 5 Earths by the end of the century. Obviously, that can't happen. So we're going to have to do something very differently in terms of our culture, our economy, our political systems, to make it work with 11 billion people on the planet.
So if we are at 1.6 Earths now, does that mean 3 billion is seen as the optimum for the planet, or 3 billion people?
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's really a matter of what our ecological footprint is for every person.
Ah.
So right now, let's say if you live in Kenya, your impact would be a fraction of what it would be if you're an American or a Canadian, where I'm from. So it's really about reducing our ecological footprint dramatically.
So 3 billion people living like Americans live now would be more than enough, but we could potentially fit more than if we scaled our lifestyles back.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, what I talk about a lot in my book is, you know, the excessive consumerism and the high level of consumption of resources that we have today. And really, that can't last, but we need another kind of an ethic, something that really yields happiness without going through so many resources. It takes something like 80 tons of resources a year to support one of us, you know, living in a place like Canada, the United States.
Really?
So we're going to have to figure out much more efficient ways of doing things. But I think a lot of it also has to do with kind of our inner life and our relationships, finding satisfaction in life, finding happiness through different things than we do today. In many cases.
And it seems like the response often to phrases like that, and we'll explore more specifically what you mean, but the response that people get the first time they hear phrases like that is often along the lines of, wait a minute, you want us to walk around in burlap bags with old tires for sandals, that sort of thing?
Yeah. That's often the reaction, is kind of go to extremes. But, you know, a lot of people in countries like Costa Rica and so on, they live a good life. They have a very good educational system, good healthcare systems, and so on, but consume many fewer resources than we do. And their levels of happiness are even higher than they are in some of the industrialized countries. So there are different ways of living that, you know, do meet basic human needs very well, but just take out a lot of the excess.
You've been looking at these issues for a long time now. We were just talking about the column you recently stopped doing for the paper in Saskatoon, 27 years at that. So I believe more than 1,600 articles on the environment, sustainable development, agriculture, and other topics. So did you think at some point the Earth's population would level off?
Yeah, well, I guess that's the projection, is it will level off around this 11 billion mark, more or less. And it's, that could be quite variable, because it just depends how many births per woman, and if it, a slight fractional difference could bring that population down somewhat. But I think the big issue really is this footprint and how much each of us consume and how many wastes that we emit and so on. That's really the key. And I think that's something we can change quite dramatically, and we already are. There's a big shift now, for example, in terms of renewable resources, moving from using coal and oil and so on to wind and solar and that kind of thing. That's actually shifting much more rapidly than people thought it would, perhaps 10 years ago. The costs are going down, and there's a real opportunity there, I think, to reduce waste. But it also brings down our emissions of greenhouse gases and could improve the situation with climate change.
Canadian journalist Paul Hanley is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the author of a book called 11. We are talking about 11 billion people on the planet by the end of the 21st century. He'll be appearing tonight at the Medford Library at 7 o'clock and here now on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us in this conversation at 800-838-3760. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. One of the things that constantly comes up when we're talking about the lifestyles that we live is the concept of growth. I mean, it seems like even if the population were steady, and it's not, we would still be talking about the need for economic growth. That is always under discussion. How do you get the people of the earth to think in terms of a steady state?
Yeah,
or maybe even dropping back from where we are now.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I think it really does involve degrowth and dematerialization. And, you know, I think any politician who tried to talk about that would be in trouble. But somehow we have to develop a different kind of economy that really moves in the opposite direction it's moving right now. And I think it is possible, and there are examples in the world and in communities and cities and so on where people find a different approach. For example, when the big kind of economic meltdown happened in Germany in 2008, 2009, and around the world, the Germans responded by having, let's say, job sharing and so on. So you get more people remained employed.
I noticed that there weren't as many layoffs in Germany. I've heard much about that.
And so they just shared the jobs and so on. So people had a slight decrease in their economic well-being or their incomes and so on, but it wasn't as dramatic. So there are policies that can be put into place to kind of address this question of growth, but it takes a big change on the political level, I think, to be able to bring that about.
Well, particularly when you start talking about sharing things, the term socialism, particularly in American politics, gets branded pretty fast.
Yeah, and yet you see the popularity of candidates who've declared themselves as socialists. So there is sort of an openness. I think if people can find ways to articulate things slightly differently.
And notice the qualifier that Bernie Sanders had to put on that, though. He had to call himself a democratic socialist.
Well, I think that's what we should be, though.
All right. It seems like that in this country in particular, and others as well, the idea of population leveling off scares people. I mean, just the idea of population growth slowing because of the concept of an aging population needing Social Security and health care and more.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get around those concerns?
Yeah, I think this is all related to this concept of a steady state society. And it's, you know, we have really developed this concept around growth, and it's based, I think, on a kind of a corporate agenda. The idea of shareholder value and so on, you have to keep increasing the value of everything, increasing the cost of housing, increasing everything to build up the assets of the wealthiest segments of society. But I think if we had a more of a sharing economy, a good example would be places like the Nordic countries, where there's more sharing in the country and people are still well off.
Paul Hanley is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Canadian journalist, the author of the book 11, about the 11 billion people that may be living on the planet Earth by the end of the 21st century. Appears tonight at the Medford Library at 7, appears here on the Jefferson Exchange now. Join the conversation. Some thoughts of your own about population, welcome here. Some questions for Paul. Either way, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You do follow partially in the footsteps of another Paul Ehrlich, and the population bomb. He came up with the term population explosion. He had some dire predictions about shortages of food and more. Do you think he was right in concept but off on timing?
That seems to be the case. I mean, I think it's inevitable. You know, if people kept reproducing at the rate we have in the last 5 years or so, the population of the world would be 27 billion by the end of the century. So people are responding, and there is this degrowth in the rate of population growth actually happening already. So I think there has been some consciousness build around that. And as people become, as the rights of women particularly increase, the rate of population growth goes down. So the concept of human rights is actually very critical to this whole issue of sustainability. So that's one area where I think we can really look to. I think the society's ethics are really critical in the area of sustainability of the environment as well.
That idea, though, about women's rights, and it's been pointed out many times that the more education women get, often the fewer babies they have. But mm-hmm. but you face societal pressures, too. I mean, even in fairly advanced countries like Turkey, where you have the president saying women should have more babies. It's their duty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. One country which was kind of a surprise is Iran, where they had very high population growth. And even after the Islamic Revolution, where you know, it seemed on the surface that women's rights decreased, their population growth went down dramatically. So it's basically at the same level as it would be in a place like Canada or Europe now. So I think that perhaps even though there is kind of some conservative values around that are expressed by, as you mentioned, in Turkey, perhaps the people's values are changing throughout the world. So most places we're seeing a decrease in population growth. There's a few countries that are outliers, for sure.
Grab the headphones. Let us take a phone call. We have Anne in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Hanley, the author of 11.
Thank you. So I've been a bicycle commuter for 41 years. Bill and I live in a house that's about 1,000 square feet. I have no children. But your idea of people living a simpler life. As someone who does live a simple life, for the vast majority of the United States, that idea will never fly. I remember, and I don't know when it was, the 90s, I never saw it, but I heard of a program called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Uh-huh.
That's where we're at. You know, people, there's a few people like me, but we're such a small minority, and the vast majority, bigger, 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 more, more, more.
Andy, do you think it does catch on over time? Have more people taken up your lifestyle over time, or are you just
no? I mean, I live in North Eugene. There is a bike path one house away from where I live, and a block away from where I live is River Road. I mean, if you compare the vehicle traffic on River Road compared to the bicycle and walking traffic on the bike path, I mean, there's just absolutely no comparison.
All right. Thanks for the observations, Anne. Appreciate that. But, you know, Anne is working from her own observations of life. I mean, you travel a bit, Paul. Do you get a sense that more people are going for simpler lifestyles?
Well, it's interesting. They say that the group they call millennials are kind of breaking with this growth in lifestyle that we've had in the past. And more people are saying, well, I want less stuff, a smaller place. They're more socially involved. Perhaps they don't have cars. This is becoming quite common in large urban areas where there's good public transportation and so on. Costs are high. But I think the other factor that I talk about in my book is how there are these forces that are going to be operating in society that will really, I think, the social and environmental constraints, things like catastrophes, weather catastrophes and so on, are really going to force people to change. I think that the caller was right that it is difficult for people to just, you know, choose a lifestyle that's very different like that. But perhaps I think we're moving into a situation as the population rises and so on, that we won't have a choice. And, you know, some places, fortunately, I think of places like Copenhagen, Amsterdam, and so on, people have chosen to switch their system. For example, people travel by bicycle and bus and so on, and the system works quite well. So some people are choosing that path. I think in places like North America, where we're not really choosing that path, I think we'll still be forced into it by the force of circumstance.
Well, when you talk about millennials, too, I think in those very terms, because of the fact that the millennials do not have a great job market to look at. It was recently reported that the for that age, for the age group, living in the parents' house again is one of the larger options that they have available to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that does happen for sure.
So a bit of an enforced downward spiral. And I want to thank you for spending 41 years as a bike commuter in addition to calling the Exchange. Let's take some more calls. Here is Vince in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange with Paul Hanley, the author of the book about population called 11.
Yes, I've been a big supporter of population control for 40 years and support different organizations and agencies, but there doesn't seem to be any national policy. Like China has a one-child-only policy, and they seem to be doing much better than they used to be. Why isn't there more effort by the United States to support population control? Why don't we have a two-child-only policy?
All right. Interesting concept. Thanks for that, Vince. Appreciate it. That sounds like a political third rail.
Yeah, that kind of thing is, I don't think it'll fly. I mean, in a place like China, they can basically tell everybody what to do. Although, interestingly, they have adopted a two-child policy. If you've only had one child in the previous generation, you can have, some people can have two children. But I think most of the forces I mentioned, the status of women, affluence increasing and so on, usually are the factors which drive down population growth. So things like education will really bring about the difference more effectively than a kind of a top-down policy.
I want to come back to talk about food, because one of Paul Ehrlich's predictions when he wrote The Population Bomb in the 60s was about shortages of food. Now, to food specifically, you're a big proponent of organic farming, I understand.
Yeah, I think there's something that's called agroecology, which is really a type of farming, which mostly is done on a small scale. And most of the world's farmers are small farmers in the area, you know, a couple of acres in size. And that system is one that kind of models itself on natural systems. So it's been found to be highly productive as well. So the adoption of these agroecology methods, which are similar in some ways to organic farming, I think is one of the big solutions for the world. Because almost all of these new people that are coming, 4 billion or so, will be in low-income countries where the farms are very, very small. So finding ways of producing more food and at that level is much more significant, I think, than increasing our production on the big farms we have here in North America.
Does the need for food heat up the debate over GMO, genetically or modified crops? Well, and people insisting, well, you need these because you need to use less pesticide, et cetera?
Yeah, well, GMOs are promoted as kind of an ultimate solution in a way, and I don't think that's the case. The National Academies of Science in the U.S. recently came out with a major report. And interestingly, it's touted as sort of a validation of GMOs, but one of the things they say is GMOs really haven't increased food production at all. When they look at the rate of increase, it has nothing to do with GMOs. So it's an interesting question. I think they really haven't given the results that had been hoped by their proponents.
Another call here from Tony in Talent. Welcome to the Exchange with Paul Hanley, the author of 11.
Good morning. I think they call them the prophets of doom, and I think you can spell prophets either way. Since Malthus and Paul Ehrlich more recently, the facts do not, the history proves that they've always proven wrong. I prefer the Mencken quote about hobgoblins being dreamed up by governments to scare the population. What makes you think, indeed, that this is suddenly going to be different because of your I mean, I don't mind you writing a book that's going to make a lot of money, and this program likes to promote such gloom, but it's going to be apocryphal like previous ones, I suspect.
All right, let's get a response. Thanks for that, Tony.
Yeah, I'm not actually a prophet of gloom, and I'm not going to make a lot of money from my book, but I'm really talking about just a need for kind of a change in culture so that we can accommodate much larger populations, and I think we can do it if we learn to be more cooperative and more collaborative in the way that we organize our society.
In fact, this is a somewhat optimistic book, it seems like. I mean, you seem to have a fair amount of faith in humanity that we'll figure this out and that we will decide, okay, I don't need this much space and this much stuff and this much money. I can do with a bit less.
I think so. I think, you know, there's been a lot of research on the sources of human happiness, and they're really all about a rich inner life and our relationships with others. They're not about the accumulation of things. And I think over time, you know, people will find that. So we're seeing, I think, a lot of interest in perhaps not in religion, but in spirituality. And things like yoga and so on have just skyrocketed the interest in that kind of development of inner life, meditation and so on, which actually gives people a lot of feeling of happiness. So I see that as one of the signs that people are willing and ready and open to change. And I think partly that's driven by the kind of alienation that we often feel as our society develops and becomes more and more materialistic. So I think we're going to see shifts, but I think the kind of destructive forces that will come into play as the population grows and our resource extraction grows, pollution grows, climate change takes off, that these are forces that will actually make us change.
About 30 seconds to answer this one. What's a good first step for anyone who wants to think about simplifying their lives?
I think it's just kind of reading your reality. Look at your reality. What is it in life that can bring me a sense of happiness without the accumulation of things?
Paul Hanley is a Canadian journalist and the author of the book 11, which predicts 11 billion people on the earth by the year 2100. And he'll be appearing tonight at the Medford Library at 7 o'clock in the large conference room. Thank you much for joining us today.
Thanks
on the
for having
News.
Me.
All right, pleasure.